Mark. Good weather out here, mate. Clear skies for a change. Thank God for that.
Oh, you must be enjoying that cup of tea out on the porch then. That's the way to start the day.
Way to live's good.
Yeah. Okay. Got a question for you. A lot of spruiking on in mainstream media about capturing actual sound in space. And, well, the saying goes, no one can hear you scream in space. What's going on with this?
Yeah, I know this sounds like a contradiction, and it isn't really. And, of course, you can't really talk to anyone face-to-face in space, even if you could pretend, you know, that nothing would go wrong if you took your helmet off. If two people were standing outside their spaceship, they wouldn't be able to hear each other talk because you need air for that sound to travel through. Now, the radio is different. It uses an electronic signal. So you can certainly talk to two people outside if they're outside their spacecraft with a two-way radio. Now, it's the same thing of what we're talking about with this story. Astronomers have picked up the sound of a black hole at the Perseus cluster. And they picked up the noise there, Mark, of the plasma and the gas and everything being pulled into it. Now, keep in mind that this is over 250 million light years away, so it's a long way away. But what they picked up is the actual sound of what it would be like if you could hear it with your naked ear. It's amplified and it's mixed with other data to give us what we've got. And if you're musically inclined, if you've got people out your way that know music, I don't know much about music, I love to hear it, but it's 57 octaves below middle C. And, Mark, I'm told that that's cosmic baritone level. So on my website, I've taken the liberty of putting a link to that sound. And if you hear it, it's the creepiest thing. You wouldn't want to play it while you're in bed trying to get to sleep. It wouldn't do it. But it's cool to have a listen to.
The screams of a dying black hole.
It is a black hole that you're hearing. You're hearing it electronically, not audibly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting. But there was something else interesting that happened Monday here, our time, that didn't quite happen over there in the US. Artemis, what happened? Do you know yet?
Well, they had a little problem with it on the launch pad. And mind you, this is a multi-billion dollar concept. It's not a tiny machine. It's very large. It's huge. It's as big as a Sydney cricket ground when you look at it, if you could lay it out. Now, they weren't due to launch it the other night, our time around 10:30 Eastern time, but they had a leak in one of the fuel tanks there. One of the engines wasn't getting up to pressure. And, of course, you can't take a chance on that. So they decided to put a hold on it. That hold went for about 40 minutes. And then it was decided that the problem couldn't be fixed, and they put the flight off until Friday. Now, it's going to be Friday sometime in America, but that makes it somewhere through the day on Saturday. We haven't got a specific time for that yet, but certainly something went wrong. They didn't need that, and they won't launch. If there's any chance of anything going wrong, they can't afford it. You're talking about a machine that's the most complex, largest, most powerful rocket ever built. It's probably got over 1 million moving parts in it. And each one of those has got to work right. Keep it in mind, when you see this launch, you're looking at history. Mark, it's like it was back in the middle 60s when I sat and watched the Apollo missions take off.
Yeah, I remember when I was doing that. We were in school. I actually brought a TV in so that we could watch it during the day.
Yeah, sorry, what was that?
They brought a TV into the classroom, an old black and white TV into the classroom so that we could all see it because we were all...
Yeah, that was great. Well, look, young people now, this is their Apollo.
Yes.
They're watching this. There's no one on board the spacecraft. It's going to circle the moon and come back again after about a month, and then they're going to test the heat shield out. They want to make sure that heat shield works when it comes back through the atmosphere. Artemis 2 will follow with a couple of astronauts on board to circle the moon. And the big one, after that, 2025, this is when we do it. We go back there with a crew of people, maybe three or four, and the first people to walk on the moon in over 50 years, that will happen. And we'll see it in live colour as it's going on. And it will be, we're told it will be for sure, the first woman to walk on another world, to go to the moon, and also the first person of colour.
Yes, she's a Native American Indian, I understand. I think that's actually amazing that they're actually going to be putting four more people on Mars. The program itself staggering in its complexity.
Yeah, it is. Mars is next. We're heading into a brand new era now where we're becoming a space-faring world. And not only that, you know, you're going to see space tourism flourish in the next 5 to 10 years. It's going to be good. Just bring the price down that I can afford it, that's all I want.
Yeah, that'd be good, that'd be good. I've been noticing some of the photos coming out of the James Webb. They are staggering, and the data keeps streaming along. I don't think we'll ever catch up with that data. But I heard they're building a bigger telescope, and they're going to put another one up there. Make the James Webb look like a pair of binoculars.
You mean the new one that's on the... Now, this is going to be a big deal. I mean, we're looking at this James Webb telescope now. We're going, whoa. And those images are certainly, you know, worthy of praise, but it's nothing compared to what's ahead. The science of the 2050s is going to be much different. Mark, we're going to have a telescope, they're saying, that's going to be... It's going to make this Webb telescope look like a little kid's toy, a magnifying glass, if you will. And this new telescope can't be built now, but it will be built in the future, and it will show us things that we'd never even dream possible. They're using Einstein rings. In other words, they're using the gravity of objects out there, and they're bending the light and bringing it forward in such a ground that you can't see. Webb is doing the same sort of thing, but this is going to be more powerful. Now, get this. They're saying that with this new telescope, on the drawing board that can't be built now, it's called the Stanford Gravity Telescope, will be so powerful that we will be able to image not only planets around other stars, but the mountains, the volcanoes there, clouds, and possibly, if there are any people on board or on that planet and they're moving around or there's anything large that is flying in the sky, we'll see it with that telescope.
Well, apparently, somebody was doing a comparison online, and I was watching it last night, and they actually put forward the position that you'd be able to read the fine print on a document from the moon with this telescope.
An amazing situation. I won't be around. No, I hope I am, but I'm going to be pretty old. But look, these are the new concepts that are on the drawing board. And like it was 20 or 30 years ago, we couldn't build an electric car and make it profitable. But we can now because with new batteries, new technology. And that's what's going to happen. So, let's go forward. Let's hope we don't blow ourselves up in the meantime.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be good, Dave. Well, I hope you're here next week as well. So, really appreciate your time, Dave. We are very, very, very appreciative. All our listeners sending in questions that I post to you guys, and it's really brilliant having you on. I really appreciate your time, Dave.
That's good. It's a pleasure to be on your program, Mark. Have a good day, you listeners. We'll talk to you next week, and hopefully have good news about a good launch.
That'd be good.